The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's happening, guys? Happy Friday, and thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome. As promised on Tuesday's show, we got a ton more UFC 300 fallout to get to. Guys, coming up, Joe Rogan says that Max Holloway's knockout of Justin Gaethje is the greatest KO in UFC history. I'm going to tell you what I think. Plus, Ilya Topuria has flipped the script. Before we get into all that, guys, I want to begin by discussing the big fight that has finally gotten booked. Oh my goodness. Ugh. I love when things take a turn, and I do not feel that Chandler and Connor are fighting for nothing. And I used to, in all fairness, and that wasn't me being a hit. Chandler might be my favorite fighter. He might be. I can assure you he's not lower than two, right? Chandler's very special. That doesn't change the fact that they were fighting over nothing. There was no title. There was no grudge. There was no ranking. This is not opinion. From day one until now, what weight class they were going to fight out was never known, and it was never fought for, and it was never argued. And you know what? It never mattered because there's nothing on this fight. So I'm not there anymore. I'm not there anymore. Michael Chandler is fighting to be, wants to be, the most entertaining man in MMA. And that is the title that Conor McGregor has. Red Panty Night is real. And it didn't have anything to do with the suits. Didn't have anything to do with the bow tie, the glasses, the tattoos, or the accent. Conor McGregor is entertaining. He has something to say. He will say it funny. He will say it meanly. But he will say it. And he's entertaining. His style is pleasing. His courage is contagious. Michael Chandler wants it. Michael Chandler wants all of those things. Everyone else did too, but they weren't willing to risk it. I mean, they really weren't. The other guys that went against Conor had other motivations. Number one was money. Some of them was self-protection. Some of them was world championships when Conor had that to offer. Just by example, like, those guys weren't wrong. Those guys had great things. But Chandler wants something that he hasn't told you guys yet. And Chandler wants something that of everybody that's ever faced McGregor, only Chandler is capable of getting, which is the fans. So many people get this wrong. Promoters get it wrong. They'll take an unpopular guy and put him with a really popular guy and have them fight with the idea that the fans will then go with this guy that just beat up their favorite fight. Like, it's just weird. It doesn't work that way. That is not a piece of human psychology. If you really like the guy, then you're not even happy that this other guy brought him down. You didn't like him to start with. You're going to not like him more. Like, the psychology is really off. But Chandler offers something different. And I share that with you as we set up this fight. And I have to. I have to because it's not about the X's and O's. We don't know what to expect. We don't know how Conor is going to do with that leg. Anderson Silva came back and it was special, but it was different. Chris Weidman is back right now and it's special, but it's different. So Conor McGregor is now going to walk in those same shoes, but he's going to do it against a very difficult opponent. Neither Anderson nor Chris had to return against a former champion. They just didn't. And I don't believe, I'd have to look, I know Chris did, but I don't believe that Anderson's return was five rounds. It might have been. It might have been because he was always fighting in such big fights. But it's a lot that Conor's biting off here. And Chandler has now announced and asked you all to buy the fight. Please buy the fight. Not for me. I don't want to take this from you. I know Conor's popular. But I am going to retire him. This will be his last fight. So I want you to make sure that you have that experience. And none of you are mad at me. Letting you know right now what I'm going to do to him. He's going to represent the last time he goes out there. And you know what? Not for nothing. There's a lot of truth to the statement. And not in the regard of the way Chandler's put in, or at least not just that. Not in the regard of, I'm so good and I'm going to hurt you so bad. Like, I can't imagine that Chandler's going to hurt Conor more than he's already been hurt, right? That leg was pretty bad. And Conor got up. He got up and got back on the horse. He got back out there. So I don't say that Chandler is a likely guy to retire Conor from like, oh, he's so good, he's going to go out and crush him. It's from a standpoint of, hey, getting Conor in there in the first place is rare, right? I mean, getting him in there in the first place is a bit of a treat. It was exciting to get the announcement that he was going to return. It's not exciting to find out somebody else is going to return. Only him. He's very unique. And Chandler has it. Chandler has it. Because, and here's the one thing that's different from Chandler and everybody else. And it's the one thing that Conor had that separated him. He's able to stand back, look at the board, and understand simple things like there's going to be a face of the company. Somebody's going to be the most popular. Oh, by the way, to be the biggest draw, to be the most popular, you don't have to have the titles or the record. There's other ways. And nobody would have thought that. Nobody in boxing has ever done it. And by, it won't matter. If you lose a fight, you're not getting it. You lose three fights, you're not fighting a main event. You lose five fights, you might as well retire. You lose 10 fights, you're a bum. They'll tease you for the rest of your life. I'm just sharing for you, like, it's a little bit different. So Conor was able to look at the map at one point in his career and say, I'm going to take over all of it. Not just 45. I'm going to take over the whole damn thing. I am going to be the face. I'm going to be the guy that goes on the box of that video game. Now, how do I do it? And he was able to start putting his strategy together. Conor did not just become Red Panda. He just become a star. He didn't just become fun. He had a plan. And the biggest reason it worked, aside from his talents, he is very talented, but aside from his talents, he was the only one that tried. It was going to be a very difficult plan to fail at, to be the face of the company, to be the most popular guy. It was a hard plan to fail at because he was the only one that even tried, that even knew it was a thing, that even knew that there was a way to do it. That put a strategy together to leverage every single thing that he did. No moments wasted, no microphone, no interview, no social media, nothing wasted. Broken with a leg, emergency to get to the hospital right after I do this interview. Joe, come sit down with me. Right? I mean, it was one of those things. And taking that from Conor is going to be very hard. But this is the first guy in Michael Chandler to recognize, to even attempt. Guys, if Michael Chandler, okay, do you understand what a scumbag Conor was when he left? Can you guys remember back then? He had one defender on earth, me. I was his only, because I was saying, hey guys, I don't know that you just saw his true character like you believe. I believe you finally saw what a committed entertainer he is. And I only tell you that they hated him. People that work in the UFC hated him because they like Jolie and they like Dustin so much and the DMs and the whole bit, they were so upset. If Chandler stays on the, he was already hurt. He shouldn't even be fighting me. I'm going to go fight a one-legged man. If he stays on it, I'm going to retire him and retire your favorite fighter. If he stays on it, there is a very strong chance, particularly if Chandler brings the energy into it, the injury, not just skills. If he brings in the injury, and points out, you're hurt, ha ha, almost like he's picking on a disabled guy. Can you imagine the heat? Chandler will be the heel of the fight. If Chandler stays on that, he will turn McGregor babyface. There is nothing that people sympathize more than a victim. If Chandler makes Conor the victim while making himself an evil heel and wins, Michael Chandler will take the throne as the UFC's most entertaining man. called Max Holloway's knockout of Justin Gaethje the greatest knockout in history. Okay, now, that is huge. That's huge. How do you become the greatest knockout in history? I mean, do you guys know that? Before you roll your eyes and go, well, you can't do that. Oh, yes, you can. The same way you become the GOAT. The exact same way. Popular opinion. That's it. So now when you have the most popular guy who has a respected opinion that tosses that out, I mean, we don't even have a conversation. We don't have a conversation until somebody argues with Joe. If Joe made the statement, that's the way it is, unless somebody argues. Now, if they argue, they bring their argument forward, and a guy like me talks about it, and you guys make your decision. That's exactly how these things get done. This is exactly how legacy is formed. There is no other way. Is it the greatest knockout ever? Well, let's start with making the case for it. Let's back Joe up. Now, if you guys watched Joe say this, perhaps he did what I'm about to do, and I don't want you to think I'm a ripoff artist. I just saw that Joe said it. I don't actually know any more than that. So if Joe told you about how dramatic it was, if he told you about the combination and then coming upstairs, using the absolute sweetest of the sweet science in an MMA situation. See, it's very rare to do. If I had a little room and I had a partner, I could really show you guys. But in boxing, when you go watch boxing, why don't you see that in MMA? I mean, let me just give you a couple examples. Like if you ever bring a boxing guy to MMA as his first practice, there's going to be the boxing coach who can work on that element with you. He's going to look around the room and just go, oh my God, you guys just don't know what you're doing. Every time, 100% of the time. Hey, well, what do you mean I don't know what I'm doing? Hey, I'm watching. You don't use a jab. The jab is the most important thing in boxing. You guys don't even use it. The second thing that none of you do, you got to go to the body. If you're not jabbing and you're not going to the body, you're not boxing. I mean, every single trainer, and I mean 100% of them, the ones that have already come through and the ones that still will, on their first day, they will make that assessment. Now, over time, they'll realize the jab isn't the same in MMA. It's not the same. These power punches will put you out, not a combination. One punch with the 4-ounce glove. So if I come in here to jab and now you're within range, if I'm throwing jabs just to size him up and he throws a straight, I'm in range, he's in range. Why am I throwing my weak punch when he's in the spot to throw his hard punch? All of a sudden, you start to realize why jabs are not as involved in MMA. As a matter of fact, there's been one MMA fight in history that was won and controlled with a jab. Do you guys know what fight that was? It was George St. Pierre versus Koscheck, part two. That's right, voice of God. Thank you, Ryan. I'll tell you guys this. Why don't body shots? Why don't we see more of those then? Because we have seen body shots, and they sure do hurt. I'll give you a great example. John Jones, boom, right to Shogun. I mean, it's a classic moment because Shogun had to stop fighting. As good as John was, Shogun was the same thing, but in the tough category. Like, if you think, oh, my God, John is just so good. Okay, Shogun is just so tough. So it was an incredible thing when Shogun had to sit and go, no more punishment. Stop. It's an incredible moment. But you don't see a lot of those. And the reason you don't see those is you need the other guy to cooperate. Right? It's a dance. It's a dance. You have a huge respect for wrestling, guys. Do you have a huge respect for it? Okay, great. If you back away, the wrestler can't take you down. I'm just sharing with you. If you've never wrestled and that guy's the Olympic champion, if you don't stand your ground or come forward, he won't take you down. He can't, which is why in wrestling that's illegal to do. I mean, I'm just sharing with you. It doesn't matter who the better striker is. If one guy is striking without grabbing you and the other guy grabs you right around the collar, that's called dirty boxing. So if you take on a great boxer who can't do that, and you've never boxed before, but you go out and do that, you will beat him. It is that effective and it is that drastic. So when I make the statement to you, the other guy has to cooperate. He has to. It's a very literal statement. So when Joe Rogan talks about this was the greatest knockout ever, well, it had a couple of ingredients that no other fights had. And even if that's a broad stroke, to have two guys in a mixed format who have an unwritten, unspoken contract. And their contract was, I will stand here if you will stand there. And I will let you throw whatever you want at me, but in exchange, I get to throw whatever I want at you. Do you accept these terms? And they did it. They did it right in front of the world. Right in front of the world. He tells him right here, and Gaethje said, you're playing just my game. So now you have a guy that's cooperating, which allows for a combination that generally would not take place. So now you have the sweet science and you have Western boxing, and it is fully on display, right? A guy can't dip outside in MMA. He cannot dip. He cannot duck. If you dip too much or you duck at all, the guy grabs you in the head and he knees you in the face. If the guy doesn't grab you in the head, he knees you in the face. And I'm just sharing for you, right? I mean, there's guys, Frazier used to fight that way. Frazier beat Ben over, then he'd come up with that Philly hook and he'd go right back down. He was hard to reach. You'll never see a guy try that crap in MMA. Try that stuff in MMA. I should have put it down. It works in their sport. But I'm sharing with you, right off the bat, this fight has something other fights don't have, which is two guys who agree to throw all the skills that they're allowed to do out the window and just do this. And they agreed at the same moment. And they agreed in one of their worst moments in competitive history, because they were exhausted and they were hurt, which means they were vulnerable. And they still agreed to it. Special. That's special. So now you have Max. Boom. To the body. Boom. To the other side. So Justin, at least the theory comes out just a little bit. Max pops up. Comes to the chin. I mean, you have one of these combinations that you've only seen in boxing. And even when you see it in boxing, you generally only see it up against the ropes. And these guys are right in the center of the octagon. It was a really rare situation. And then you had other ingredients as well. Like, you want to know a great knockout just for shock factor would be when a black belt in jiu-jitsu knocks out the world's best kickboxer, which actually happened in the heavyweight division in the form of Gabriel Gonzaga versus Mirko Krokop. Nobody, including Krokop, thought Gonzaga could even get his leg that high, let alone would he even try it. So then you had that surprise factor, right? That's what I'm talking about. Well, this had the same surprise factor. How come? Well, because you don't sleep Justin Gaethje. You don't even hurt Justin Gaethje. Justin Gaethje hurts you. And then to the fact that, well, it's not an absolute. You know, like Poirier's done some stuff to him before, you know, and old Eddie Alvarez. But there was a little bit more to it. Those were one-off situations, and they were against guys Justin's size. So one thing that we do know, even if Max can beat him, which he wasn't supposed to, he was the dog, but even if he could beat him, he's not going to knock him out. You guys know that Max was a 2-to-1 dog. Do you understand what that means from a gambling standpoint? It means for every dollar that you bet on Max, you would get back 2. If you bet $100 on Max, he's 2-to-1, you get back 200. It's pretty good. Whereas Gaethje, if you bet $200 and he won, you get your $200 back, of course, but then you get $100 to win. You get half. Okay. Do you know that a knockout was 11-to-1 favoring Max? Do you know it was 17-to-1 to go down in the fourth round? Are you aware of that? For every $100 you bet on Max, if you had knockout in the fourth, you'd have got 17 back. 1,700. It's an interesting situation. Because generally, if a guy was a 2-to-1 dog, it's going to be 6-to-1 for the knockout and the upset. Like, it's going to be one of these things, but it's still tighter. It's still closer. The odds makers were so sure that Max wasn't going to knock him out. And I think that that added to the drama of it. Not to mention the beauty. Not to mention the fact that they showed it. They showed it. We're going right here. You accept, I accept. Not to mention Max was winning. It was Max's idea. In fact, it was Max's bad idea. Dana even spoke about that. This is a terrible idea by Max. Max is already on his way to fight of the night, which is not his concern. If you want to bring that in, that's 4th, 5th, 6th down on the list. His first concern is to win, to beat Justin Gaethje, to become the BMF champion, to have success at 155 pounds, to become the number one contender. Like, there's an order to it. To be exciting, it matters, sure, but it's way down here, and he's already done it. He already done it at the time that he tells Gaethje, who he knows he's beaten, Max only has to run out the clock. All he has to beat is the clock. But he felt he owed something more to you. He already was the fight of the night, but he thought he owed you to outdo the round that he had just done 5 minutes prior. He thought he owed to you to be the greatest fight you've ever seen, not just the greatest fight that night that happens to have the biggest bonus. He thought he owed to you excitement. He thought he owed to Justin Gaethje one more shot. I'm not going to put you down, Justin. We all know that. I've already hit you 100 times when I was more powerful and I didn't put you down. So I get that. But you just might put me down. And you gave me this opportunity and you brought your belt and you got us this spot. So I'm going to give you one last crack, young man. And I'm going to stand right here. I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do. And then I'm going to do it. And he did. And he knocked him out. And it is for those reasons. He knew he was fight of the night, and he knew he was going to be BMF champion. And he knew the biggest risk that he could take, and the only way these things were going to slip out of his grasp is if he stood toe-to-toe with the bigger, favored Justin Gaethje. That's exactly what he did, which is why Joe Rogan is exactly right. It was the greatest knockout in history. Oh, how's this for a twist? Topuria is not being called out. Topuria is doing the calling out. He is calling out Max for Max's title. I gotta tell you, as simple as that might sound to you, and if you guys read this article, you might have enjoyed it, had a little coffee, moved right on with your day. You shouldn't. You should go back. This is poetry. Not only is this poetry... Topuria's doing such a good job, right? And he's an interesting guy. I mean, he got the whole country of Spain behind him. Those are his people. Those are the people that know him. You get a lot of people that know a guy. They won't sign off on him. They don't get behind him. I mean, it's one of these things. These guys know him, and they're coming out in droves. They like him. I mean, I'm just sharing that with you. Like, I haven't got to meet Topuria, but as I stood back and look at him, I bet you I'd like him. Now, Topuria comes out and he says... And the reason I call it poetry is not only because it's beautiful. I call it poetry because it requires interpretation. And you got to break that down line by line, frame by frame. And what you normally think of as a paragraph, think of as a stanza, because it's got its own meaning. Now, I'm sure Topuria did not mean this to be eloquent the way I'm taking it. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Even a broken clock is right twice a day. So Topuria's flipped the script. Now, you must understand why. Athletes have a position where they do their best. Some thrive under pressure. For example, some do the best when they have low expectations. A lot of times a guy will win more fights as an underdog than he does the favorite. And you can kind of look at that and then start to ask him questions and break it down, what it does to his approach and his mentality. Very common. And an athlete, or at least a good one, will always put themselves in a position that gives them the biggest advantage. So if you see a scenario and that doesn't fit your narrative of being the favorite or being the dog, I'm choosing favorite and dog, but it could be a number of other things. If you find a scenario, you change it within your bubble. If you're the big favorite, and you don't like to be the favorite, you change. The only reason they're giving me this guy is because they think that's the guy that can beat me. They want me out of here. They're trying to get rid of me. You victimize yourself, which can create an anger, which can give a motivation, which can lead to better training if you have that type of mindset. Now, Topuria just let us know what kind of mindset he has. And he wouldn't know any better, would he? Like, if Topuria could put out his best performances as a favorite, as defending a champion where somebody's coming to take what he has, he wouldn't know. He wouldn't know if he does his best work in that situation. He's never been in that situation. And there's something about the unknown that can be scary, so Topuria isn't even going to take that risk. He's going to stay on course with what got him to the championship in the first place, which is you have something and I want it. You're the big man. I'm the new kid in school and I'm taking over this playground. And why should he change, by the way? Is he 15-0, guys? If I'm wrong, he's 14-0. It's a perfect record. He is the champion of the world. And you know when a guy's really good? When a guy is really good and he's main eventing, that's a different category. We have had a number of champions, by the way, that don't ever main event. Not a good sign. But if you're a lighter guy, 45-pound weight class, and all of a sudden you can fill up an arena, all of a sudden you got guys calling you out, you're calling them out, you got a beautiful record, they've done some really good things themselves. I mean, I'm just saying, like, it's a really special thing. And Topuria is now telling Max, I'll fight you, but I will only fight you if you put up the belt. And that's the part that is pulling back and letting us have a real glimpse into the way Topuria thinks. And once we learn that, and then we juxtapose it with a perfect record and a world championship, we see that he is thinking correctly. Now, Topuria is in no position to be telling Max what he must do. I mean, right, when Max is the number one contender, when Max has the ranking, he's the former champion, he's the greatest that weight class has ever seen. Like, Topuria is not in a position to come as though I'll do you a favor. I'll sidestep and push all these rightful guys out of the way, and I'll deal with you, but you got to bring me a little something. I want to put that belt up. Like, he's not in that spot, which is what makes it beautiful. It makes it almost a troll. And I'll tell you what, if you can troll Max Holloway, if you're a bad enough dude, if you are confident enough in your skill set that you can go troll Max Holloway, right? I'm in, man. That is fascinating that Topuria told him this. Oh, and guess what? Max should absolutely put up the belt. I mean, that changes things very significantly. And you know what else I like about it? I don't know that the promotion, the UFC, I don't know that Dana understands how that belt is viewed amongst the boys. I don't know. Dana himself said when he put the idea out of doing the belt that he was expecting his team in the world to laugh at him, to tell him what a terrible idea it was. And, I mean, it turned into such a good idea. The Rock came out, the president came out, Madison Square Garden sold out. That's what a good idea it was. And the BMF belt is different because, first off, it's coveted. Much like an Olympic gold medal, there's other awards you can get that equal the same competitive. Like the World Championship, okay, the Olympics. Look at a globe. Look at Earth. Okay, if you win the Olympics, you're the best on Earth. But if you win the world, it's the same thing. And it's highly coveted. But why is the Olympics more coveted? Well, it's just rarer. Real simple. I'm not giving you some brilliant concept here. But it's the same thing with the BMF. And history does matter. Look, there was world champions in the UFC. It didn't mean anything to them. It didn't mean anything to their families. You know, it was cool. They'd rather have it or not. But it didn't mean anything. And the reason for that is there was 18 guys under contract throughout the entire company. You know, it was a very different title. You put world on it, but there was nobody outside of North America that had ever competed. Like, it was just a different time. And those guys didn't understand that no, the history books aren't going to talk about any of that. The history books will never say there was 18 guys under contract. History books won't even talk about the fact that there's almost 800 guys under contract now. That's not how the story's written. Who is the champion? The end. And it's reflected upon very different. And there hasn't been a title to start out that has had the momentum of the BMF, which comes back to The Rock, the president, and Madison Square Garden. A Diaz, a Masvidal gets passed on to a Gaethje, a Max, a 300. I'm just sharing with you, like, the lineage and the history of this is going to be huge. When I talk about it's a title amongst the boys for the boys, every fighter wants to be viewed by other fighters as somebody that never quit, as somebody that had courage, as somebody that was brave. The record is a little bit more a fan phenomenon. The wins and the losses is a little bit more for the pundits. The boys, when they walk in the locker room, do not want the other boys looking at them and go, my God, I just saw you in the monitor and you quit. Now, every fighter does, but they will do their best to not do it in competition. Do it in practice. Do it out on the hill. Do it in your garage when your coach is pushing you too hard. Don't do it in competition. And moreover, if you do, hide it. And if you're a BMF or you're considered or you go into that category, it does not have to do with records and accomplishment. It has to do with an attitude. It's a very special thing. And that belt represents the way every fighter that gets into this wants to be viewed and thought of by his fellow fighters. That belt represents it. And it's a very special thing. And I'm not certain that the UFC is aware of that. I feel that the data's there, right? I can go back to the sold-out garden. Go back to the most powerful man in all of Hollywood, or at least the most famous. Being in the ring and being part of it. The leader of the free world being part of it. Or 300, the people's main event, the one everyone was looking forward to, and the one that came out smelling like roses, like, it's special. And if Topuria's going to do the work, he should. He should do everything he can, right? I mean, a champion doesn't always get something. Sometimes he just has to keep something. When you make it to the very top, you can't always be greedy. Sometimes you just got to hold on to it. I understand that. But for Topuria to do everything that he can to also get that, to also have that credit, I mean, you think Sean O'Malley wants a piece of Topuria now. You got no idea what O'Malley's going to do if it's a 45-pound title and a BMF while he has the 35-pound title. Like, I mean, I'm just sharing for you. You have no idea the stakes amongst the boys in the back. I know the audience likes it. But the BMF title is a peer-driven title. Summer is coming up, and that might mean that you're going to have a little more time on your hands. Why not use it to learn a new language? Rosetta Stone, the most trusted language learning program that truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, is here to help you. Some of you may be traveling abroad this summer, and you might want to experience that country beyond just the touristy type spots. Your experience could be upgraded just by learning the native language. Now you can download the Rosetta Stone app to your phone or tablet and learn on the go while driving, riding on the subway, running on a treadmill, or even laying poolside with just a 10-minute lesson per day. Rosetta Stone's lessons are designed for long-term retention of language skills rather than short-term memorization. The focus of the program is preparing you for real, authentic conversations, not just knowing a couple of translations. It's like having your own personal trainer for language learning. Rosetta Stone has been used by millions of people for over 3 decades. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a limited time, my listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off. Unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. That's a steal. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, guys, it's that there's always a catch. So when I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan, I thought, what's the catch? But after talking to them, it all made sense. There isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. They cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly on to you. I haven't skipped a beat using Mint Mobile services. I have a great service even when I'm traveling for over less than 70% of what I was paying before. Listen to Uncle Chael and say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans starting at $15 a month. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. Ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/chael. That's mintmobile.com/chael. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/chael. $45 upfront payment required. That's equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower, above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your first stop for the best in Western style. And by the way, you don't have to be into the Western look to grab a good-looking pair of boots. I recently got a pair of ostrich skin round-tip boots, and I'm warm with my suit. These boots are so versatile that I can throw them on with a full head-to-toe suit. And Anthony Smith came right up to me and he's asking me where I got them. Well, I told him the only place to get them, Tecovas. And they have a seasonal limited edition offering. It's right now, this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, accessory, and more. My wife just surprised me with the ostrich wallet and a belt for my birthday, in case you've seen me. I feel like I look pretty sharp in it. I truly do. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, their direct-to-consumer pricing keeps value on your feet and money in your pocket. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary beverage or two, and shop for new styles. The smell of fresh leather and a friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience quite like it. If you can't make it into the store, just visit Tecovas.com. That's Tecovas.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and they ship right to your door. Go to Tecovas.com and find your favorite pair of boots today. Conan. Do you guys know Conan? Not the barbarian. Conan. Just Conan. WCW. Conan. All right. So I got to meet Conan one time. He's a very nice guy. He's got a podcast. I went and I did his podcast with him. He and Disco Inferno, we're doing one. This is a few years back. Maybe it's still out there. I'm just sharing for you. One and only time I got a visit with him. Nobody's in character, and he was a very pleasant guy. Now, I say it to you that way because I don't know that he was a thug. I just know he played one in the late 90s. And, I mean, he played like a real, like a gangbanger type angle when he's in WCW. And, but he acted it, right? We all are, as human beings, whoever we pretend to be. So, when he's in character and he's doing that, there was a legit tough guy in the front row named Troy Hughes. Now, I know Troy Hughes because he was my teammate, and I know he's a legit tough guy because I've never beaten him. But Troy had just had a vertebrae surgery. He had just, and I can't, was it his back or his neck? He had just had it. And a huge wrestling fan. Troy had an opportunity. I believe they were in Spokane, which is his hometown, but he had an opportunity to go to this event. He's got great seats. He took it. So Conan and his opponent are outside the ring, and they're doing their spot, and Troy's yelling, and Troy's part of it, whatever he is, and Conan smacks him. Conan hit him. Make no mistake, he hit him. He just didn't hit him in the head. So if you hit somebody, but it's not the head, sometimes you don't call it a hit. You call it something else, like a chop or a smack or a backhand, but whatever, and he knocked Troy back. There's nowhere to go, right? You got your chair at your knees. And somebody puts some force on you. You go back. And for a guy that had just had his vertebrae, ouch. Ouch. Kind of a big deal that nobody, surprise, attacks him. And Troy did nothing with that. And I mean nothing. And there was even a suggestion back then. The world was a little bit different in the 90s. Like, there wasn't dot-coms. Not everybody had an email. Very few people had cellular telephones, but I'm just sharing, like getting messages and getting stories out was kind of hard. But I did hear people in the training room that were aware that this happened speak to him and ask him if he was going to sue. And Troy said, of course I want to sue. And they said, well, you're in a different spot. But first off, he put hands on you. They can't do that. They'll have video footage that your lawyer would be able to subpoena or threaten to subpoena. But because you just came off the surge, it's going to be very different. You're going to get a settlement. And I even heard somebody tell him 50 grand. Now, I only bring this to you because Troy had a different code. Troy said, Conan came out of the ring over where we were, which we thought was cool. He only attacked me because I did, and then there was something. He stuck his head in there. He yelled something. Whatever it was, he was cheering. But Troy liked being part of the show. He wasn't upset, even though it did hurt. And even though Conan shouldn't have done it, and even though it's against the law to do, Troy wasn't upset. And I tell you that story because it's as close as I've personally been to an athlete punching a fan. And I'm watching UFC 300 over the weekend, and here comes Sarkarian to the ring. And he throws a punch at a fan, but I can't see the fan. So now I'm left to make the assumption it was at a fan. What else would it be at? But moreover, because I can't actually see the person, I don't know if it landed. Now, this is just for me. If you guys have different angles, go right ahead. This is the one that I saw. This was a monitor in the back. I'm not even positive that's the same feed that was played out to the world. Dana had to talk about it. And Dana is only Dana can do, would do, and consistently does do. Backed his guy. Dana said, well, I mean, you shouldn't be taking shots at these guys. You know, they're all amped up. They're in this mode. There's a reason I've got security on every side. They're walking to war. They're in a different headspace. You know, Dana just defended him. And Dana said, I fully expect to be sued. I'll deal with that on Monday. Well, the fan who, okay, well, hold that thought. Dana defended him. Then Sarkarian comes to the press conference. He gets asked about it. I think it was Kevin Ioli. Might have been John Morgan, but he tees him up and says, man, what happened there? Sarkarian told the truth. He said, the guy showed me the middle finger. Which I think is funny, by the way. Like, I know that's simple, but he showed me the middle finger as opposed to he flipped me off. Right, so this is a Russian trying to explain in English to a North American reporter. Says he showed me the finger. And then Sarkarian goes further. He says, do not show me the finger. Do not any of you, please, do not show me the finger unless you're at least 100 yards. Because I don't want to go to jail. And I will go to jail because I will punch you if you show me the finger. It was just like, he ended up making poetry out of a crime. There was something about this that just worked. And the fan spoke up. The fan came out, and he was like Troy Hughes, happy to be part of it, accepted responsibility, admitted that he showed him the finger. And see, that's very relevant because the fan is not seen on TV. I mean, if you're talking about from a legal standpoint, like, I don't know that you could get away with saying I flipped him off and therefore a professional attacked me. Like, I don't even know if that's going to hold up, but I'm just sharing for you. The fan painted the picture for anything that we didn't see. Oh, and by the way, he backed up Sarkarian. Backed him up by saying what he told you happened is exactly what happened. And then the fan accepted responsibility, apologized, and would make it clear, I'm not going to sue. He said, I wouldn't mind a ticket for myself and my girl. I think he even had a show, UFC 303, I think is what he wanted. But I thought it was an interesting story. I really did. No, Sarkarian's wrong. And I still don't know if that punch landed. Like when I saw it go, it was extended, the shoulder, the arm, I could see that like that would break a brick, that punch. I mean, it was a real punch. But I don't know if it landed. I don't know if it hit him, if it missed him. Maybe he was aiming for the finger. That's why it didn't hurt. Maybe he aimed for the shoulder. I don't know. I don't have these details. But Sarkarian told the truth. And Sarkarian asked you to please not show him the finger because he doesn't want to go to jail. And that particular fan that stepped forward and handled it the way Troy did, I hope they get him the tickets. And I think that was a cool move. And there's nothing in America, nothing. And there used to be a doctor, a lawyer. Everybody's parents were talking about that. Maybe someday you could be a doctor or a lawyer. And then you get the people that tell you about an astronaut. You'll hear these really wonderful things. And those used to be powerful. You have the politician, you'd have the millionaire. They still had power. But right now, the most powerful thing in America is the victim. If you can be a victim, but you get it all of it. Trust, money, everything beyond rebuke, beyond question. And this gentleman had the opportunity to be a victim. And he did not take it. In fact, without being solicited, he handed it back. If he wants to show some fighter the middle finger, he bought a ticket. I'm on the opposite side of it. I don't think a fan has to cheer you, and I don't think a fan has to be nice. He's not allowed to touch you, but I think he can show you the middle finger. And so for that guy to come out get in front of this and let everybody know it's cool in the gang when the boss is already expecting to be sued, which basically means he's accepting the lawsuit. Let's talk and get this done. And the guy says, no, I think for that, he deserves a little respect. And I'm on his side, and I'd like to see him get those two tickets. There is a number of things in our industry that you hear called like a vernacular. And there is an accepted level of vernacular. You guys ever follow politics or history? You get some college professor, you get somebody that comes out, they're a foreign policy expert. Now, they'll know the difference between Iraq and Iran, or at least they'll tell you that they do. They'll know the difference between a king, a president, a prime minister, or they'll tell you they do. They'll know a little something from the good book, whether it's New Testament or Old Testament. They'll have just enough. Slide a Ayatollah in there, slide a Mukhammedajan, and all of a sudden, they are a policy expert because you don't have any idea what they just talked about. They have no idea what that means. You want to know something? We can bring it down. We don't have to go as high as politics. I see it in my sport with nutrition all the time, strength and conditioning. You get somebody can throw out just enough words. Tell you about your grams and your carbs versus your effective carbs. Tell you about your nutrients and your micro nutrients, and that, you're completely lost. You're gonna take in 12 grams of protein every 3 hours for every 2 pounds of body fat, and no one has any idea what you're saying. And boom! But that guy, instead of getting listed as somebody that is saying words that no one can understand, he'll get listed as an expert. So. In our sport, you will hear until you're blue in the face, footwork. Like if you ever have somebody breaking down a fight, they will say footwork. And that isn't an absolute, but that's 8 out of 10 in MMA. 8 out of 10, 80% of the time you will hear footwork. 100% of the time in boxing, you will hear footwork. Now, as we've learned from jiu-jitsu and judo, wrestling, whether that's freestyle, Greco-Roman, collegiate. As we've learned how important that grappling arts are, if you just go watch a grappling art, you will never hear them say the words footwork. If you're ever getting a list of compliments together to give a great wrestler, footwork will not be in there. And I only tease it and begrudge it because nobody knows what it means. I fought for 5 world championships and footwork, as best I can tell, means your feet are moving where and how they move. Whether that's a distance that could create a balance, whether that's a rhythm, whether that's fast, slow, distracting, it's how your feet move. So it's very weird when somebody breaks down as a compliment somebody's footwork. Do you when you're at the mall, people are shopping, they're from store to store. Hey, look at that guy's walk. I like how he walks. Maybe one guy's a little faster, he gets it around. Hey, look at his feet. I like that footwork. It's just weird. It's a really weird thing to say. Reach advantage. Now, reach advantage goes to whoever has a longer reach. It is not actually an advantage. If you were to go grab 10 fights at random, absolutely at random, get them together and see who won the fight, and then see if their arms were longer than their opponents, you will quickly see it is not an advantage. The longest reach in our sport is John Jones, who just might be the best fighter sport. Right, so right there, you could use that and go, hey, look at that. Okay, great. But Mike Tyson never had a longer arm than an opponent. Never, not once. Then we go to size advantage. And size advantage is always a great one because Muhammad Ali was 198 pounds in his prime when he was the heavyweight champion. There's only been 3 boxers in history to achieve a championship that had to cut weight to make heavyweight. We got one right now in Tyson Fury. But whether it is Ali or whether it is Mike Tyson, they're very light. In MMA, we had Brock Lesnar. Do we have anyone else? Do we have anyone else that had to cut to the limit? Francis was about 258. I've had people think that he was the limit. Francis is that he's big and he's the right way. But he doesn't fit that same criteria. So size advantage just means whoever's heavier. And then you've got the all-coveted age. And age also goes down as an advantage. But I just don't know where that tipping point is. Like, when I was a senior in high school, there wasn't an eighth grader walking God's earth that I had to sweat. But then when fight guys talk about it, the advantage goes to the younger guy. And it's like, okay, well, there's a tipping point. I mean, I feel like we should explain this a little bit. And amongst the terms that get thrown out, that possibly you use, definitely you accept, but that you don't actually have a definition for? Angle would be one of them. And while that's something that you don't understand, it's real. Like if I could hit you on the chin, okay, your chin, that jawline, it would matter where. Like if I hit you with the same exact force and velocity straight on, I could get a very different result if I hit you from this angle. If I was going to hit you with this angle, I did the exact same force if I hit it at that angle. There was a great example, and it was so advanced, a lot of people didn't even know what it meant. And it was Anderson Silva versus Chris Weidman, part one. And Anderson lost, and, you know, Dayton's in the back, and he sees him. He's got, hey, you know, how you doing? Checking on him. Anderson was in great spirits. Said, oh, hey, Dana. Dana's kind of watching him, thinking, why is this guy in such a good move? Well, the answer is because Anderson, as he saw it, it wasn't that he lost or he got upset or he gave his title away. He had his foot in the wrong position just by 2 inches. And if he would have just had his foot and toe over here facing this angle, his defenses would have been different. He wouldn't have been caught and he wouldn't have been knocked out. And therefore, he had confidence for a rematch. Now, that story I just told you, either you appreciate because you heard it through the grapevine, or I just told it to you for the first time, because Anderson never said this publicly. He had just told Dana, my foot, you know, it caught me, but I had my angle was off by 2 inches. And Dana came out and said, I don't know enough about the sport to argue with him. Like, that's the greatest mixed martial artist of all time. He sees things differently. I went back and I watched Alex Pereira put Jamahal Hill down. Now, when he put him down is all that I was looking for. I wasn't looking for the swarm and how he got him out of there. The put down was the first of the dominoes. Jamahal doesn't go down. None of the rest of it happens. And it was this very cool moment. It was this gangster movement by Pereira. Pereira gets hit below the belt. Herb Dean steps in to break the action. Pereira, through his peripheral, he's looking at Jamahal, but through his peripheral vision, sees Herb coming in. And Pereira stops him, actually touches him, pushes him back, you know, lets him know they're just balls. It's no big deal. So I watched that over and over. It was such a cool move. It looked cool. You remember where you were the first time you saw a walk-off knockout? First time I ever saw it was Mark Hunt on their feet. Boom, he threw this punch and he knew it was over. It was just this really cool deal. Jalen Turner thought he had one over the weekend. Just for example, the guy goes down, you'd think he did enough, you turn and walk away. It was right up there as a pleasant visual to watch and then go, oh gosh, I wish that happened to me. That was so cool. It was right there with it, and I just kept watching it. And people were sending it to me. I was working with Daniel on our show over there. Good guy, bad guy. And we broke it down. And I kept watching it. And you want to know what I finally saw? I finally saw something that I had never looked for. The entire time I watched Herb Dean, and I looked back, and I watched Alex. I watched Alex finish. I go back. I watched Herb. And I watch Herb and Alex. What I never looked for is what Jamahal did. Have you? Have you looked to see what Jamahal did? Because Pereira holds a hand and even says something to Herb. Stay back, I'm good. He says, and Herb, that was great communication. Herb was going to break the action to check on you. Whoa, he just checked on you. Right? Everybody's doing what they're supposed to be. But Jamahal stops. And not 100%, right? I mean, if this is an automobile, I'm not saying that he put it in park and got out of it, but he stops. He stopped doing what he was doing and started doing something else, which was to relax. And then he's like, oh, we're not, okay. And you would understand where that would be that brief second. Like, if that were you, you'd think that, right? You've never seen a referee step in and a fighter tell him, get back. Like, if the ref comes in after you know you just kicked the guy low, you're going to have a break in the action. So Jamal begins that break in the action. When Herb gets notified and makes the decision that he's going to get out of it. At which point, Jamal, there's like another beat. And he does just like this. Can you guys see me? Okay, it's going to be very slight. Can you see me? I'm going to do it right now. Are you ready? That's what Jamal did. And he might have even said something, but this is what he did. He took his eye off that ball just for a second, but he turns that way, and now he's got to get back in. As he turns his head, Alex took the angle. And this has never been spoke of, right? You're never going to get it. Jamal has moved on to the point that he's already called out, Jiří Procházka. An idea I happen to like, by the way. I'd love to know what you guys think of that. But the same as Anderson told Dana, I want to be worried about a rematch because I understand what happened here. And my toe was 2 inches different. That would have gone down. I'm telling you right now, if you go back and you watch that clip, I must have seen this thing 10 times. That's generally an expression. I saw it 10 times. I must have seen this thing 10 times before I ever looked at, what does Jamal do? And there is just a split instant where he looks away. And I think he might even make a, oh, okay, what? I felt like he even said something. And he comes back. And right as he looked, and he comes back. Alex was over here. At a wrestling coach, I'll leave you with my final thought, but he used to tell wrestlers they cannot lose their focus. And he would say, I saw you lose your focus. It was like this. And the coach would say, I admit it was a quarter of a second. I admit it. It was fast, but it still happened. And the guys would, what's the big deal, coach? So what? I blinked. So what? And Coach Pittman would tell him, all right, great. I want you to go home tonight. I want you to turn your burner on until that stove is red hot. Then I want you to put your cheek on that burner for a quarter of a second and come back and tell me it's not a long time. And if you go back and you watch it, I encourage you, try it. But watch what Jamal does and watch the reaction from his opponent. Heavyweight, how would you do it? How would you do it if you're in charge? What are possible scenarios if you were in charge? Now, you got to make sure that you understand your task, some of which you can choose and some of which you have to deal with. By example, I want a title fight at light heavyweight. Okay, so you don't get to go, well, you know what would be great is Conor McGregor, light heavyweight. Oh, gosh, shut. No, please, please. Alex Pereira is the champion. Who's he going to fight? And the reason I put it to you like that, we got to put Pierre in there, okay, at light heavyweight. But we want to screw Uncle Iev. We want to make sure we don't put Pierre with Uncle Iev. They're complete opposite fighters. And history says Uncle Iev not only beats him, he beats him as history says we just gave Uncle Iev an easy fight. Now, I got a big star here with Pierre, and he doesn't do much, but he does something. Like, it's not a lot to paint up your face and come in a headdress to the weigh-ins, but it's a lot more than anybody else does. And it's not a lot to not just walk to the ring, but to saunter to the ring as though you're looking for prey, stop at one point, and shoot an arrow at the guy. It's not much, but it's a hell of a lot more than anybody else does. Riding a hoverboard around while shadow boxing isn't much. It's a hell of a lot more than everybody else does. So before I take that guy that I just described that just got an amazing knockout over a former world champion on top of the bill of the largest card an audience has ever absorbed, before I take that and give him the worst matchup in the division, tell me what my other options are. Now, if I don't have any other options, right? I mean, every now and again, I will show an integrity to the rankings since I'm the one that created it. Like, every now and then, I'm going to do that. But I don't want to, and it's sure not going to be the first decision I make. But tell me how I get around it. and I thought I knew. What I was planning to do is have Alexander Rejcik beat Jiří Procházka, and he was on his way to doing it, and then I would have had my problem solved. But because that didn't happen, and I can't go to Jiří Procházka, because I already had that, and I'm looking for some parity. I can't bring in Jan Blachowicz, because we did that to get Pierre to the number one contendership. What I'm saying is I don't have all the options. And if I did, if I could just do anything, I would simply turn to my greatest light heavyweight ever, John Jones, and I would tell him, trim yourself up, you're going back home. And for his retirement match, I would put him in there with Pierre. But we're not there. Conversation is around essentially anything except Ankalaev. For example, conversation started by my champion Pierre, who doesn't do much, but he does more than anybody else, actually has him up at heavyweight. Conversation is aligning him with Tom Aspinall. And I don't hate that idea if I knew I was going to get John Jones for two more. If I knew John Jones was going to come back and then look to unify, and no disrespect to Stipe, by the way. Those two are going to fight. You understand my point. I could have just said Stipe right there. I just happened to say Jones, right? Whoever wins that match. If I knew they were going to come unify, I would just move on with life. So if I knew I was going to get Jones versus either Pierre or Aspinall, whoever won that fight, I would make that fight. But I don't know that, so help me out at light heavy. And I think therein lies a lot of your problems. I think therein lies the most probable matchup, which is going to be Ankalaev. And like everything that I just stated for you, you want to know one person that's never going to agree to that is Alex Pereira. Alex Pereira isn't going to look at the board and go, Ankalaev is a problem for me, or he's a squash match for me, or he's my hardest opponent, and therefore I won't do it. Alex Pierce, a goddamn macho, he'll look at Ankalaev and say, that's probably a squash match. It certainly is historically. That is my hardest challenge. Make sure I have that guy next. That's how he works. Like, if you're willing to go up and deal with Tom Aspinall, who many believe to be the greatest heavyweight, Michael Bisping, a Hall of Famer, believes Aspinall's the best heavyweight we've ever seen. He put him in front of Fedor. And I'm just telling you, some people believe, well, got to be pretty good, right? Whether you go with Bisping or not, you at least concede to the point he's got to be pretty good. So if he is willing to go on and take that guy, of course he's going to take on Ankalaev. But we're not looking out for him right now. We're looking out for ourselves, and we don't want to see the fight. And moreover, we don't want to see the fight if our guy goes down. Because I could lay out a 4-5 sellout, box office moving, monetizable plan for you that involves Pereira right now, win or lose. I could give you 5 fights right now, regardless of outcome, that will swing a needle for Pierre. I can't give you one with Ankalaev, not one. So, what do you do? And by the way, I'm not speaking to the idea that a guy's got to be flashy and got to have all these bells and whistles and things around. I'm just sharing with you that if you're doing that matchmaking, you're not looking to just do checkers. You're looking for a more longer-term play. If you put Pierre and Ankalaev together and you think you're a smart guy and you argue that's what the rankings and this guy said and that's the right match to do, fair enough. I got to remind you, you're doing a business and you tell me you're going to do it anyway. Fair enough. But I'm going to say, when they fight, what does that lead to? What does that draw you to? And it's not as though you're not without an answer, right? I mean, you could start to find some pretty, you're at Procházka, get him back in the mix. And of course, you do have the Rejcik, and you get him back in the mix for Ankalaev to take on. What are you doing with Pierre? And does he stay there? Does he leave weight class? Last time he lost in a weight class, he left the whole damn division. That's the bad news. The good news is he became king of that division. So the only way we're going to get Alex to heavyweight, quite possibly, is to get him beat at 205. I mean, I would go a step further for you. If Alex was to lose at 205 pounds, I will predict for you, you don't see him at 205 pounds again. Now, I'm just using what he did at 185, and I know that was a bigger cut. I understand there's some lifestyle changes, and there was a reason he needed to go up, and his friend and Glover was there. Now, that's not, I do understand those things. But you are dealing with a level of success that is seldomly ever seen. Two different sports, multi-division, in both, told he can't on everything, and quite frankly, should not have been able to. In 2024, if your background is in striking and you have zero competitive grappling, you should not in a mixed rules match, right? I mean, what Pierre has done is ever bit as much of what Francis went and did against Fury. Every lesson we've learned, that can't happen, but it did. And so it's one of those spots that if you were the matchmaker at 205 pounds, the bad news about doing Ankalaev and Pierre, the bad news, and let's just get it out of the way, the bad news is now I can't do a press conference. Just for example, if that's my main event, I now cannot do a press conference, and I like to do press conferences. So my workaround, whenever I have that happen, is I just put another title fight on the card, and even though it's a co-main, it's a title fight, it's going to cost me a fortune, but then those two guys can do a little of that back and forth. We can hide this fact and we can get on to the next one. And the upside, if Ankalaev beats him, if Chael's right, that's the way and that's the only way, you're going to get what you really want to see. I mean, what do we really want to see, guys? Want to see Pereira defend his light heavyweight title? I did see it. Yes, I did want to see it, but I did. Want to see him win the light heavyweight title? I did, but I already saw it. What do we really want, guys? We want Pierre to get his shot at heavyweight. We want to see if history can be made. We want to see if he can go champ, champ, champ. We want to see if he is the greatest fighter the Octagon has ever seen. And if we have to get him beat, if he's going to prove his greatness, but defeat comes along the way, if he's one of these guys that falls forward, and thus far, is exactly what he is, then maybe Ankalaev is exactly the guy we should be calling. Nickel was weighing in on Chimaev, so here, let's back this up. Bo Nickel goes out, he has a fight. Bo didn't like his own performance. Remember, he got up and he gave himself the thumbs down. And Chimaev weighed in, and he called the whole thing, the hype, the energy, the placement, they did the whole thing, BS. This is all rubbish. Okay. So Bo's got to respond to that, and Bo's response was pretty accurate. He just said, I'm glad that Chimaev is weighing in. I'm glad that he's seen it. I'm glad that he's thinking about me, because I am thinking about him too. And if we ever fight, I'm going to out-wrestle him. In fact, I'm going to take him down. I'm going to ragdoll him. Now, I didn't just give you a verbatim there, but I just want to kind of set that stage, because what do we got to do to get that fight? And so often, and once in a blue moon, the strategy actually works. But ever so often, you will get the decision makers to look and go, yeah, that's great. Oh, man, I follow it. I hear the narrative. I know they're talking about each other. They're both right. Oh, this is great. This is what the people want. And they're going to want it even more if I make them wait. Like I mean, that is such a common concept that you've often got to deal with, and there are times when that comes through, you get a nice payoff. I am going to speculate right now. I do not know. But I am starting to believe that there's something to this idea of Chimaev and a travel ban. Very strange that I would be the one to come out and support the rumor of Chimaev in a travel ban, because it is the second time that this rumor has happened, and I am the one that broke the rumor the first time. You guys remember that? Hey, Chimaev can't come here. Hey, Chimaev is locked out. Hey, Chimaev can't get to the States. And this was going everywhere. Chimaev never denied it. His team never denied it. The UFC was never even asked about it, let alone did they settle this, but this was a very well-known belief. I'm in Las Vegas. I go to the Performance Institute. There's Chimaev, training. He's training with Latifi. Took out my camera. I said, hey, you guys want to know if Chimaev can get here? I turn it. I interview Chimaev real fast. I put it out on Instagram. It was the biggest video that I had ever put out on Instagram. So I share that story with you because wouldn't it be weird that this rumor has come back and Chimaev hasn't denied it? The UFC hasn't even been asked about it. It's the exact same thing. Oh, and then I should mention, when we see Chimaev fighting, it is in that part of the world which helps to add to the theory. And I just don't know whether it is true or not. But Chimaev does keep getting booked in the Middle East. And when I stare at that, I have to wonder, does that matter? Like, if I couldn't leave Westland, good with me. I don't like leaving Westland anyway. I don't even like to leave my house. I mean, I just share with you, bring them to me. They fight in Westland, great, bring them over here. I'll just do the fights when they come to Westland. But is that the way it's being looked at? Or is there something that's putting a bit of the reins, bit of a clamper down on Chimaev and the opportunities that he can get? Not for nothing, he was named the number one contender. And not for nothing, to become the number one contender, he beat a former champion. I mean, history says you beat a champion, you fight for the championship. That's not an absolute. But history also says, if it's a number one contenders match and you win, you fight the champion. Well, he teamed those up. He beat the former champion, and it was named the number one contenders match. I'm just sharing for you, so he didn't fight for the championship. I think there's a story behind that. Don't think you have to correct. I know about the hand. I know about the whole thing. I'm just suggesting for you, if, full speculation, if something, travel ban, is hindering Chimaev and putting the belt around him gives you pause. Just for example, it would seem to me that that would increase the likelihood that we could get him both. It seems to me it would increase it. And that fight, American wrestling has dominated the UFC at different eras. It's not right now, I'm well aware, but at different eras since 1993, American wrestling has dominated. We have had times where every single weight class was wrestlers. And we don't win all the gold medals. We don't win all the Olympic medals, America. So it would seem, once we've been shown how effective wrestling is, that if we could go find the guys that are beating us in wrestling, that are winning the gold medals, and we bring them over, that they are going to run rampant. But since 1993 till present, at least off the top of my head, I can't think of a single guy who became UFC champion. I can't think of a single guy that fought for a championship that was one of these medalists from other countries. And the reason for that, we are the only country, okay, there's three styles of wrestling, freestyle and Greco-Roman. And then you have collegiate. And collegiate wrestling is only done in America. And that is what the game changer is right there. Of the three styles, collegiate will encourage you to keep a man down against his will, and it will encourage and incentivize you to get up and get free against the other guy's will. That is the difference. That is what separates, and that's why I have to say American wrestling, because America is the only country that does that. Now, I'm not sharing for you that that is enough to put Bo over the hump, right? Bo's going to have to get him there in the first place. If Bo does get him there, he is more trained in staying there. If Bo gets put on the bottom, he is more trained in getting up and getting away. In fact, he's the only one that's trained to do that. Chimaev would have never worked on that in his style of wrestling. But before we ever get to that point, when we see very good wrestlers go out, it's very similar to when we see very good jiu-jitsu guys, or we see very heavy-handed strikers. You know, two of the heaviest-handed strikers we've ever seen, made for the worst match in UFC history, which I'm sure you could argue three or four other ones, but Derek Lewis and Francis Ngannou. They both were so worried or respectful of the other, they just stayed out of range. So you get these two heavy punchers, and there was no punching. But it's not just them to blame. You want to see a really boring match? Like, you want to know the match that will never get made? You want to guys go in the Abu Dhabi finals and then they never meet up in the UFC ever? Because it was painfully boring to take two great jiu-jitsu players and put them against each other. Oh my goodness, if you ever want to see a snooze fest. And it's not as though wrestling's hands are clean. Colby Covington versus Kamaru Usman. You got a Division I All-American. You got a Division II National Champion. I mean, it's very, very tight. Who would win if they did one of those matches? It's very tight. And they figured out early, real early in both fights, the squeeze isn't worth the juice. The energy that I'm going to exert to get you down. If I fail, I'm now exhausted and stuck on my feet. If I succeed and you get up off the bottom, I'm now exhausted and back on my feet. And they both just threw it out. And we had two great wrestlers, and it wasn't a matter of not finding out who was better. They didn't try. We don't know who the better wrestler between Usman and Colby is because they didn't try. It's not a matter of they tried and the other one shot. They stopped trying. And I'm only throwing that at you because I think the bow really does mean it. I mean, just for fun and just in a hypothetical, I do think if we find a way to get those guys together, which is the hard part, I do think that Bo's telling the truth, that his plan would be to take him down and ragdoll him. It's just, it's one of those spots. You know, who the better wrestler is? It's got to be so drastic and so meaningful in MMA. You've got to be so incredibly much better to get the guy there, be able to keep him there. Oh, and by the way, even if you succeed, 5 minutes later, the referee's going to bring you up, make you let him go. It's one of the things about our sport, right? It's one of those things. People love to tell you 80% of fights go to the ground. It's like a fun little stat. But they leave out the other stat that's important, which is 100% of them start standing up. Devin Haney. You know what, guys? It's made me a little uncomfortable. It's made me just a touch uncomfortable because there is something happening here. And there's something interesting happening here. There's a real public interest story. But what do you do? I mean, just for example, Ryan Garcia, this is the narrative, all right? I'm going to give the narrative. Ryan Garcia is behaving in a way out of character, and he's behaving in a way of a person who is not well and in full control of his capacities. That's the narrative. But how many guys do you see on TV that are not giving you a performance? I mean, like, what do we do with that is what I'm asking you. What do we do when we, the outsider, sees somebody that's captured on film that appears to be not in control of their faculties, particularly when it comes to the mental side? What do we do? Do we speak out about it? Do we tease him? Well, what if we do tease him and give him a hard time? And we're right. He's lost control of his mental faculties. You don't tease a person like that. You help a person like that. And so many times at other places throughout history, that's exactly what would happen. You come in and you would pick on a guy like this. And that's not the way this is supposed to be handled, though. Now, if you want to point it out, if you want to say, hey, there is something here that is amiss. But I will just share with you, it's made me a little bit uncomfortable. And I don't know Ryan Garcia. I reached out to him on Twitter a few times to be a little bit of fun for the two of us. Hey, let me help you with this. Let me help you with that. I was just trying to acknowledge it in some capacity. And I must share with you, that's about the extent that I have followed him, at least as it comes to verbal, to hearing what he has to say. I've watched him for a period of time. There was a rumor going around years ago. I was going to box Roy Jones. Had two opportunities to box. One was with Roy Jones and one was with Mike Tyson. But one of those opportunities was going to be on a rooftop in Saudi Arabia. Oh, and by the way, Ryan Garcia and Henry Cejudo were going to be on the card. Now, I only insert myself as a way of kind of trying to remember when that was. And that was about 3 or 4 years ago, but this is what had me watching Ryan Garcia. And he was very young at that time. God, he was like 19. Good looking guy. And he hadn't gone through the Olympics. And I never know why. Like when we have an amateur and you hear about how wonderful he is, and you go look and go, well, I'm sure he's really good, but why am I hearing about him if he didn't go to the Olympics? I mean, in all fairness, why am I not hearing about the guy that did go? Like, no matter how good you want to tell me this guy is, if he didn't go to the Olympics, then there's another guy that's better. I just always wonder that. But boxing doesn't fully agree with me. Some of these guys, they think they turn pro and Olympics is amateur and they brush it off. And I'm watching Garcia. And I even remember it was a double-ended back. Bomb, bomb, bomb. He's hitting the bag. And I remember he took his lead hand, came behind his back and hit the bag and then looked at the camera and smiled. Did you guys see that? I mean, that video is actually very popular. I remember thinking, wow, that was great. I love watching those guys, by the way. I could watch those training videos. Those mitt sessions are like a dance, right? You get a guy like Floyd and they're going through. I love watching that stuff. Even the guys that are on the jump rope and they're real good. Guys on the speed bag. So I share this because I was impressed with Ryan Garcia and this is why I remember it. But if I was to tell you the truth, or at least, you know, to remember it more accurately, I cannot say that he is behaving differently now than he did in the past because I didn't see him in the past. I watched him. I never heard. So there's a number of people that are coming out and they're very concerned. But they're concerned to the extent that they believe there is something off mentally. And therefore they want the commission to step in and stop the fight. And that becomes a very, very interesting topic. And the commission cannot just step in, right? This is a government agency. It's important that they're right. If they're going to take an action that is irreversible, this will change a guy's life, they got to be right. They do not get to come out and say, we didn't like an interview. We saw something in an interview. They're going to be immediately questioned. Who are you? Who are you to say what's normal and right? Who are you? Oh, and by the way, what are you comparing it to? Other fighters? I mean, it's a band of misfits from the beginning of time. What word did he use that you've never heard another fighter use? Did you ban the other fighter? What did he say that raised the tension? Have you never heard another fighter say something that raised the tension? Did you ban that fighter? I mean, it's one of these slippery slopes. It really is. I went through this very early on as a fight promoter. And they wanted to HIV test the athletes. And so many people thought, well, that makes perfect sense and that's a great idea. And you go right ahead. You set the rules and you go right ahead. I'm not going to do it. If you want to do it, you're the government. If you want to do it, carry on. But the reason I'm not going to do it is twofold. What if he does? That's a big question. What if the athlete attempting to fight in mixed martial arts has HIV? What do you do then? You ban him? Do you tell the public what you found? What is it that you do? And it's a very fair question because all sports are treated the same. You don't get to say that it's combat. I mean, that's just not how it works. They're all to be treated the same. So think of a baseball player. Are you going to HIV test them? No. Well, why not? Tell me there's not blood in baseball. Sure there is. And what do you do if little Timmy has HIV? Little Timmy, who's had a hard plight, and apparently he's even got a death sentence, was born with HIV. He's 11 years old. His mother used needles. The father, he's never met him. He's got a pretty hard plight as it is. And now what are we going to do? We're going to ostracize him from the community. We're not going to let him put on the Little League uniform. It's one of these spots. Go right ahead, government. Test these guys all you want, but you do it. Don't tell me to do it. And that's the problem I used to run into in Oregon. They were telling me to do it. Oh, no. No, this is on you. And by the way, I didn't have a lot of support at that time. People were looking at jail. They're in there punching and trading blood. Of course, there's got to be an HIV test. Like, I understand that argument if you're a very undeep thinker and you get there. If you can just think a little bit deeper and tell me what you're going to do if you find out that he was born with that and you're going to take his sport away. I'm just sharing. You be the one that has to deal with that. in a court situation. So when you see Ryan Garcia, you have a number of tests that he has to pass. And they're not overly complex, I'm aware. But what would your recourse be? And what would you say in court? What would you say for taking his license? That some people on Twitter said that this didn't make sense, or he's more entertaining now than he used to be? Or he's claiming that, I mean, it's one of these spots. And I meet people like this all the time. Believe me, I meet government officials that work for places like commissions that will come in and do ridiculous things such as that. And I always rebuke them the same way, 100% of the time, very calmly. But I'll hear about, you said this and you did this, here you promoting and building a fight. And say, if you had the authority, would you go arrest Al Pacino for killing people with machetes and selling cocaine? Or are you able to understand that you just watched an episode of Scarface? And it creates for a very tough conversation and an awkward one that most people, particularly in charge, lack the rhetorical skills to navigate. And when you have something like that, which is exactly what you've got with Ryan Garcia, that's why you're not hearing anything. That's why people aren't talking about it. They don't know what to say. They don't know what can be done. And if there's something to be said or there's something to be done, it does seem a bit strange, at least to me, that you're putting that on an athletic commission. Why would that go to the athletic commission? I mean, if you're going to go out and you're going to create headlines, why are you sending it to them? If you're going to take that energy, wouldn't you go to his mom? Or his dad? Or his trainer? Or his manager? I mean, it would just seem. Looking at a commission to stop a fight? For what? All right, everybody, that is it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. And a shout out goes to Drew, who wrote a review on Apple Podcasts. He said, you called out the rankings committee for not having a sack. I almost drove off the road when I heard it because I was laughing so hard. Well, Drew, I appreciate that comment. And more importantly, I'm glad you're alive and well and are able to come back with everybody else on Tuesday for more Chael Sonnen. And until then, you're welcome.